Welcome to the Self-Defined Human Podcast. This is your host, Michael Corman. We're in June 20th, 2021. Happy Father's Day. I want to talk about something about the drama triangle, about blaming other people and why it's okay to blame other people, why this is not a problem, why you should blame everyone else for your problems. That's what we're going to talk about today. So if you listen to my very first podcast episode, which is about the drama triangle, now let me just recap what that's about. So the drama triangle is this idea that in social roles, there's three different roles you can play. There's the victim, there's the persecutor, and there's the rescuer. Okay, so this was invented by Stephen Cartman, who's a psychologist. And the victim blames the persecutor. You know, the persecutor is persecuting the victim, the rescuer is trying to rescue. You know, you can figure it out, okay? Victim, persecutor, rescuer. It's a triangle, okay? And the idea is that this is responsible for a lot of human suffering, is when we force ourselves into these roles and we see ourselves as being a victim, we see other people as being persecutors, we see, etc. We see ourselves as being rescuers, we have to rescue the victims, we have to defeat the persecutors. You know, so many stories fit into this mold, so many human relationships and human dramas fit into this role, fit into this mold, this template. Now, there's an alternative to it, an alternative way of looking at the world, which is the empowerment dynamic. And this was invented by David Emerald. And he has a book, it's called The Power of Ted Stark, which is a cool book, like, 'cause it's really short and it's really easy to read. And he kind of explains an alternative way of looking at things, which is instead of the victim, you have the creator. Instead of the persecutor, you have the challenger, and instead of the rescuer, you have the coach. So you have creator, challenger, coach. Creator, challenger, coach. That's in contrast to victim, persecutor, rescuer. Creator, challenger, coach. That's the empowerment dynamic. It's an alternative triangle. Now, this idea of, you know, you in your life, you can be either a victim or you can be a creator, okay? So there's the victim mindset, the victim orientation, or the creator orientation, the creator mindset. Those are two different ways of looking at things. Now, in spiritual circles, this is the kind of thing that you're going to hear a lot, okay? And you'll use different terminology for it, and that's not the point. The point is not the terminology. The point is the idea behind it, that being a victim is bad and being a creator is good. Now, I want to talk about this because when you get into spirituality, and when I say spirituality, I'm not talking about anything supernatural or anything like that. Now, I hate the word spirituality because there's all kinds of baggage that comes along with it. But I'm just talking about, you know what it is, okay? When you're dealing with meditation, you deal with yoga or you deal with self-help, or all this stuff, you get into the same mindset. And there's this particularly pernicious idea, okay? And it's often called spiritual bypassing. But I don't want to label it so clearly, because first of all, it's extremely common. It's almost impossible to avoid it. I don't think you can avoid it. But it's just a natural process of spiritual development, is that you have to go through this. Because if you approach spirituality from the normal mindset, the normal way that you've been socialized, and the normal way that you've been taught to look at things, and which is, we're going to try to feel better, okay? We're going to try to improve our feelings. We're going to try to change our experience so that we are happier. Okay? It doesn't sound unreasonable. And this is how most people approach spirituality. When people get into meditation or yoga or anything, This is what they're doing. They're trying to feel better. Fine. As you gain wisdom, okay, so as you do these practices, as you meditate, as you do yoga, as you do self-inquiry and you do self-introspection, you start to gain wisdom. You start to see more of the true nature of reality. You take sensations that you experience out in the physical world and you start to get a better sense of cause and effect and you see what they mean. That's spiritual development and that is wisdom. That is awakening and enlightenment, and that's a path that you go down. Now, as you do that, you gotta keep in mind that you're taking this mind that's been socialized in the drama triangle, in the feel-good mentality. Okay, that's why you're going down the path. The path doesn't care. The path doesn't care why you're going down it. The path does not, it's not, it doesn't understand your human concerns. It doesn't understand your socialized concern. The path doesn't know anything about the drama triangle. See, the drama triangle is something that was invented by people who were a slave to cultural memes that were developed in response to sensations, okay? So as you become enlightened, you go in the opposite direction. So you take the social constructs and you deconstruct them and you come back to pure sensation. And it's very paradoxical because the reason that you're going down the path is because of your mimetic conditioning. But the path itself is not motivated by that. The path itself is motivated by the pure childlike wonder and just, oh, that's really interesting. Like looking, oh my God, like that's, whoa, that's cool. Like that's all that the path is, okay? There's nothing there that is, you can say, well, it's like, this is ethical and moral and this is the way it ought to be and the way we should do things. That's all stuff that you learn. It's all linguistic, verbal stuff that you learned. And that's exactly what the path is trying to undo. Okay. So there's a paradox that happens. When you go down that path, you bring all of your cultural conditioning, including the part that says that the idea is to feel good, including the part that says that the idea is to do good, to be a good spiritual warrior, to be a good whatever it is that you want to be good at, okay? You want to be competent, you want to have high social status, you want to have all that stuff. So this is not compatible. You have to undo all that, okay? It's this you know, the deconstruction of the ego, the deconstruction of this fundamental arrogance that lies at the center of your selfing processes. That has to be deconstructed. Now, I have not fully deconstructed it, so I can't tell you what the end of the path is like, but I've deconstructed parts of it, so I can tell you what I know. The point of the spiritual path is to learn to see the true nature of reality as it is, as it happens in the moment. It's not to change reality. It's to see it as it is, okay? Now, let's go back to talking about blame here. In the drama triangle, if you're a victim, yeah, you're gonna blame the persecutor. But let's talk about what blame means, because blame is just a word. And I wanna be clear that what we're talking about here, there's this concept, okay, of form versus function. Form versus function. When you are looking at something and you're trying to evaluate something, is this something that should be here or not? Is this something I should be doing? You gotta consider the function of it, not just the form. So let me say that things that sound like blame, okay, by form, meaning the actual words that you're saying, if I say, you know, Joe is an idiot, Joe is responsible for all my troubles, okay, it might sound like I'm blaming Joe. Maybe I am, maybe, I don't know. But the form, yes, it's the form of blame, okay? Like grammatically, there's, you know, Joe is responsible for all my troubles, okay? Like I'm grammatically, it is like I'm talking about Joe and I'm saying all these things that Joe is saying, things that are wrong with Joe, and I'm attributing some kind of agency to Joe with respect to my suffering. And that sounds like blame. Let's talk about the function, okay? You gotta always look at the function. What is the purpose? Why are you saying it? What impact is it having on the environment? When we're talking about, you're talking about the spiritual path, and you're saying that thou shalt not blame, thou shalt not be a victim. Okay, so what does that mean? Does that mean that thou shalt not use blame language grammatically in your constructions, your linguistic constructions, that you shouldn't do that? Like, what's the purpose of that rule? Like, why is it that the spirit, you know, let's say we're talking about God here. Why does God care what kind of grammar I use? Like, why does God care about that? Like, do you think that, I'm personifying God here, okay? Because I'm not making any sort of supernatural claims about anything. I want to be super clear there. Like, that's not the point here. This is a poetic device here. When I say, you know, does God care? Like, did God invent language? Like, did God invent the English language? Like, what about if you're speaking in German? Can you, like, is it different there? Like, did God invent German? I mean, what does that mean? Like, words are words, okay? The word is an expression of something, and you learn to say those words. You were conditioned to say those words in certain contexts, and you learn to say it that way. You know, there's an athlete, a basketball player, I don't remember, this is just coming to me, I remember reading about this, who was on Twitch, and he was playing a game, and he was live streaming. This is a professional basketball player, and he was, I can't remember his name, and he some sort of Jewish slur escaped his lips while he was playing this game. And, you know, it's a whole uproar about this. And his defense was, well, he didn't know what the word meant. This is a word that his gaming community was using. They just threw it around. It was just like, it was just a way of kind of, you know, it was just, they were just saying, they were just letting off steam or whatever. This is just how they kind of, you know, it's just like, oh, you idiot. Like, they would just use Jewish word there. And I don't know if that's true. I mean, maybe it's true, but let's say it's true. Okay, let's say it's true. Then the function of the word in that instance is not, it's not hate speech directed towards Jewish people. Okay, the function of that speech is to let off steam. Okay, it's the function of that speech. It's just like, ah, idiots. That's all it is. Okay, so that's the function. So when you say, like, thou shalt not insult Jewish people, thou shalt not level hate speech against other tribes, is not, it doesn't seem to me that rule was invented for the purpose of thou shalt not let off steam, okay? So, but if you're fixated on the form, if you're fixated on the grammar and the vocabulary, then you're gonna look at it and you're gonna take the words out of context and you're gonna just run with it, you know, based on your own agenda. If you know you're the Anti-Defamation League and you're all about, we're just gonna fight anti-Semitism wherever it appears, then you're gonna go after people who don't, you know. And I'm Jewish, so I can say this stuff. I can say whatever I want. I have total license to say anything I want about, and you know, you can't call me an anti-Semite because I'm Jewish. So those are the rules. Now, when you are on the spiritual path, you are gonna get tripped up by this. Okay, now there's nonviolent communication. It's very popular in that crowd. Okay, and I love nonviolent communication. It's brilliant. It's invented by Marshall Rosenberg. There's a 3-hour video on YouTube you should watch, which it's a great introduction to it. He's wearing a red shirt. You'll know the one. It's like 3 hours. He has a red shirt. He's got these puppets in his hands. And there's another one that's 8 hours. If you really like the 3-hour one, you can watch the 8-hour one. And he has a book. It's called Nonviolent Communication. Can't remember the subtitle. I don't remember. But nonviolent communication, let me just tell you, the basic idea of it is that instead of, you know, he's got what he calls jackal language and he has giraffe language, okay? So jackal language is the sort of normal language that we all learned, where you blame other people, you accuse people, you shame other people when you want them to do your bidding. And giraffe language is the more enlightened nonviolent communication, NVC, informed language. And he calls it giraffe language because giraffes have the biggest hearts out of any animal, apparently. So this is, you know, this is very much like, you know, jackal language is very much like the victim orientation, because you're blaming other people. And so in nonviolent communication, what you learn is you learn that the words that we say are an expression of our feelings and our needs. So if you make an accusation, if you say to somebody, well, you're making me feel bad. You make me feel guilty. Okay, so you wouldn't say that in NVC because that it's like you're neglecting to see that what makes you feel guilty is not what the other person did. What makes you feel guilty is your own needs. Okay, so there's some need that you have that's not being met, and as a result, you're feeling guilty. If you feel angry at somebody, it's not, they didn't make you angry. Okay, you have a need for something and it's not being met, so you feel angry. And same thing when other people are talking to you, when people accuse you of something, like you hear it. What Marshall says is you hear it with giraffe ears. So you don't hear the accusation, you don't hear the blame. What you hear is the feelings and needs that are alive in the other person. Now, people make this mistake with nonviolent communication all the time when they're learning it, and I've gone through this, and I'm still going through it, where he has specific formulations, like specific ways of rewriting your sentences so that they're more NVC compliant. Okay, so instead of saying, you know, you made me angry, you know, you're making me angry, you would say, I'm feeling angry because I have a need for understanding right now. Okay, and what you'll do is you'll, you know, so you have like this very stilted, contrived way of speaking. And it can make people angry, honestly, because, it can sound very manipulative and very, like, very artificial. And it is. Especially when, you know, it's the same thing, okay, when I'm talking about going down the spiritual path, why you're doing it, to feel better. The reason people go down the NVC path is because they're trying to, honestly, it's because they're trying to manipulate other people. They're trying to learn how to have conversations where other people don't get so angry at them. It's stuff like that, okay? And which is, you know, okay. But understand that the purpose of NVC is not to control other people. It's not to change other people's behavior. The purpose of NVC is to have more honest connections with people. Okay, it's so that when you're speaking, when you're having an interaction with somebody, that you are able to hear their feelings and needs, that you are able to hear your feelings and needs. Okay, so the form of the words, the specific grammatical constructions that he gives in the book and in the talks on YouTube and everything, those specific formulations are not the point. That's totally missing the point. Okay, that's just a way of practicing. It's just an exercise. It's just a way of kind of like checking to see if you're getting it or not. But understand that when you use that stuff, that doesn't mean that you're really doing NVC. Okay, like, not necessarily. You can kind of get good at that without really connecting to it. Okay, so you have to kind of keep yourself honest with it and understand that the point is to connect more deeply. That's what you're aiming for here. And it's not always pleasant. It's not always pretty. It's not always like people are going to get along, because sometimes, you know, people are going to misunderstand you. Like because people are not, they're not so understanding. They're not so compassionate that they're sitting there waiting for you to just empathize with them. And then everybody's going to be happy and everyone's going to get along. It doesn't work that way. It has to be where, like, yeah, you empathize with them, meaning you understand their feelings and needs. Great. Okay. Now that consciousness is now going to inform how you behave around them. But sometimes the language, you know, especially people who don't have that kind of training. Okay. When you have two people that have both studied NVC in a room together, this is going to work a little bit better because they both are kind of on the same page and they understand the point of the language. They understand what the other is trying to do. But when you don't have that, when you don't have that understanding, you know, if you go into, you know, Marshall Rosenberg learned, like, the reason that he's qualified to teach this is because he has gone into war zones. He's gone into the Middle East. He's gone into, you know, he's dealt with warlords. He's dealt with, like, tribal vendettas and all kinds of things where people are, you know, they have, like, sometimes generations-long conflicts where they're just not getting along and they're, you know, killing each other because they cannot see the other as being anything other than an enemy. And those are very intense situations. Those people don't understand MVC. Like, those, you can't talk to them about feelings and needs because they don't get that. All they understand is you know, destruction and revenge. And so sometimes, you know, you might have to use the language of destruction and revenge in order to speak in a way that they understand. The point of NVC is to develop the consciousness in yourself so that you understand that when you're hearing somebody speak, that you don't hear it as blame. Because that's the problem. When somebody's blaming you, it's like when somebody's blaming you, the problem from your perspective, there's two problems. One is that they might hurt you. Okay, so is the blame informing their actions? How? If they blame you, and furthermore, meaning that they have the words of blame, okay, and furthermore, they have the sort of consciousness of blame, meaning that they see you as the actual cause of their suffering, and that if you're eliminated, then their suffering is going to diminish. Then they might try to hurt you. Okay, the other problem is that the way, based on how you've been socialized, you are going to blame yourself. Okay, and you know, when they blame you, there's going to be things that are triggered in your mind. Let's talk about the impact that it has on your behavior if you're blaming somebody. In the drama triangle, if you see somebody as a persecutor, what this might lead you to do is it might lead you to try to hurt them. It might lead you to try to silence them, to cancel them. Now, is that a problem? Okay, because again, let's always talk about function, not form. So what's the problem? What's the problem with hurting somebody? The problem with hurting somebody is not that it's wrong. The fact that it's wrong is what might clue you in on the fact that it's hurting them, okay? Or might not. Maybe there are things that are wrong that might not actually hurt anybody. But when something is hurting somebody, hold on a second here. When something is hurting somebody, then you might say, oh, there's too much traffic here. When something is hurting somebody, you might say, you know, the problem is that it hurts them, okay? So there's like the human cost to it. It hurts somebody. And when you're watching a horror movie, okay, and you see it's a slasher movie, and there's like, so, you know, people are getting slashed up and all. That, like Friday the 13th, okay? And there's what is this here? Hold on, I'm just confused about life here. Okay, I think I know where I'm going. When you're looking at, like, Friday the 13th, okay, and you've got, this is the one with Jason, right? Yeah, and he's got a machete or whatever, and he's, like, going after people and cutting them up, okay? It's like, you feel, like, when you see somebody get slashed, like, ugh, just, like, you don't like that, right? It's like, you have this kind of, like, reaction to it, this physical reaction, because you don't want to get slashed, right? So you kind of relate to them, you know? This is empathy, okay? It's the ability to look at somebody else and to kind of experience what they're experiencing. This is how you understand what other people are experiencing, because you feel it in your own body. So this is something, you know, when I went, you know, learning to draw, I, you know, you have to do this. Like, you look at people and you draw them, it's like you got to feel it in your body. Even if it's not a person you're drawing, anything that you're drawing, you have to feel it in your body. Okay, this is how you understand music. When people are playing music, you're listening to music, it's like there's a energetic experience that's being conveyed in the music, and so you hear it and you encode it, you decode it. It's like a speaker, a microphone in the speaker. So when you're talking to a microphone, there's air vibrations, there's waves that go through the air, sound waves, and they vibrate the microphone. And that vibration gets turned into an electrical signal. and the electrical signal goes to over to the speaker, and it vibrates the speaker, and then you hear the sound, because that speaker then vibrates the air. Okay, so it's just like it goes in and it goes out. And that's how it is when you do music. It's like the energy from the performer is going into the sound, it's making sound, and you are taking it in, and you're feeling that in your body. It's making your body move in the same way that the musician's body was moving, more or less. Some approximation of that. So that's how it works. And that's called empathy. It's like mirror neurons or something. I guess that's what they call it. Who knows? It doesn't really matter. What matters is that when you watch somebody get sliced with a machete, you feel that in your body. And that stops you from hurting people, okay? Because you don't want people to get hurt. Why? Because you're a person. So you don't want people to get hurt, okay? Now, in the jackal language and mindset, which isn't really language, it's more of a mindset, it's a whole worldview, a whole consciousness. In that consciousness, because there's this layer of we're going to divide people, we're going to take people are separate from each other, meaning that when you think about another person, you're not thinking about the human being. So it's not, you're not thinking about when your enemy in jackal consciousness gets slashed, you don't feel anything because you're not seeing them as a human being. You're seeing them as a cartoon villain. So that's the problem with the drama triangle. That's the problem with being a victim to the point where you're going to retaliate against your persecutor. Because what you're blocking out the sensation that when you see the persecutor get hurt, you don't feel anything. So you just see them, you know, they sometimes will say you're a means to an end rather than an end. Okay, so if a person is a means to an end, that means you're viewing them as an object. You're not relating to them. You're not connecting to them on that deeper neurological level where you are feeling the pain when they get hurt. And that's dangerous because it leads to people hurting each other. And you don't want to live in a world where that's the default way of doing it, because then people are going to hurt you. So the rational part of you should even pick up on that. And there's all kinds of problems. I mean, if you can't relate to other people in that way, if you don't sense other people's pain, you're going to have a very hard time understanding what they're saying to you also. You might, and you know, sometimes people say, Michael, you're victim blaming. You think that we should have empathy for the persecutors. You think we should have empathy for bad people. Yes, I do. And you can even look at this in purely selfish terms, because if you don't have empathy for a villain, then when the villain attacks you, when the villain like bullies you and makes fun of you, you're not going to understand that the villain is in pain. You're going to think that you're the one with the problem. You're going to think that the things that they say are true, because it's going to trigger you. The words are going to trigger you. And that's all you're going to feel. You're just going to feel your own trigger. You're not going to feel the bully's trigger. So there's a practice of Tonglen where it's from Tibet, and it's taking and sending. So it's a meditation where you will feel, you will take suffering from other people and pull it into your system. You take it in, and then you take the equanimity that's inside you and you push it out to them. And you do this as a practice. You take in suffering and you send out equanimity. This is the opposite of what most people are doing when they try to meditate. Most people, when they meditate, are trying to take in the equanimity and push out the suffering. That just makes everything worse, because it creates more divisions. And it trains you, when you do it that backwards way, it trains you to not, it trains you to take your own suffering very, very seriously. It trains you to take other people's suffering as if, you don't feel their suffering. You don't feel that their suffering belongs to them. You feel that their suffering is yours. So you don't realize, because you're not, you're not, you're not practicing seeing equanimity for other people. So you're not seeing that other people are generating their own suffering. You think you're the one generating the suffering, meaning you see them triggering you. That's all you see. You see a cartoon person triggering you, and you feel your suffering. But you want to get to a point where basically it kind of equalizes, so there's just suffering. It doesn't belong to anybody. So this is the problem when you have that jackal mindset, when you have the drama triangle mindset, is that you are not seeing the suffering as being belonging to you. I lost my train of thought. Did I make my point? Like, did I get through everything that I wanted to say about this? It's very tempting when you're on the spiritual path, because you're going to start to realize things like equanimity. Oh, I need to be equanimous. I need to, when I get triggered, I have to take responsibility for it. And then you get very hypersensitive to anything that looks like when you're not taking responsibility, when you're being a victim. You get very sensitive to that. But see, it becomes a problem because you're still operating under the agenda that the idea is to perfect yourself somehow. The idea is to somehow get rid of all the bad stuff, which is fine on some level. Like, yes, purification is the point. But you have to, it's purification of ignorance. It's purification of... It's not purification of what you think it is, because the spiritual path there are phases to it. And at first you get a sense of what's going on, okay, in your reality. You have a sense of, you have these realizations about, like, there's me. I have thoughts. And you start to realize that you are independent of your thoughts, okay? Most people don't know this. They're walking around, they have no idea. To them, thoughts are just like, it's them. It's just like how they see the world. They don't think of a thought as being an object. They don't think of it as something that they can see objectively, that they can see it from a distance. Okay, but once you see that, that's big realization there, okay? And you have a bunch of those kinds of insights. Then you kind of get into territory where it's like you start to see how things are made up on a very subtle level. And this is when you start to realize that reality is weird. Reality is not as it appears to be. And this is like, can be pretty mind-blowing at times, okay? And this is when people have like crazy experiences. Okay, at that point, basically, all the actors are on the stage. And at that point, what the idea is that now you want to learn how to distance yourself from things. You want to learn how to see things without reacting to them. And this is the most difficult stage. And it's the thing that people have a hard time with. So these are people who have spiritual insights of some sort or another, but who are having difficulty. So they're advanced enough that interesting things are happening, but they're not advanced enough that they've mastered everything, okay? So at this stage, this is a difficult stage, and this is a stage that they call the dark night of the soul, or the dark night. All kinds of things are going through your head, and your frame of reference will shift. And you'll mix and match things. You'll mix and match the ideals and the values that you had before you started on this path with all the results that you've accrued along your journey. All of that stuff will mix together, and you end up, you can end up becoming extremely obnoxious, because you are applying sort of mundane values to supramundane reality. The point of the path is to see the non-self inherent in all phenomena, everything that's here. It's not self, it's not you. It's all happening on its own. It's not happening because of your participation. All the things that you think of as being you, they're not really you. They are just things that are happening on their own. Now, you might know that a lot of things are not you. You might know that the sky is not you. You might know that the traffic lights are not you. You might know that I am not you. But see, as you go down the path, you might start, some of that might get a little bit confused because you might start to see how some of those things are composed. You might start to see that your perception of me is not, it is itself a thing, okay? Because you might not have been aware that your perception is a thing. You might not have ever paid attention to your perception. You might have only paid attention to me. But once you start to gain some insight, then you start to realize that there is a perception, and perception becomes a first order object. And the perception starts to decompose, and you start to realize what is constituting the perception. And that gets really weird and it gets really confusing because we don't have language to talk about that stuff. Okay. Now, I'm getting a little bit off the beaten path here because what I wanted to talk about in this episode was why it is that the drama triangle is misunderstood, why it is that nonviolent communication is misunderstood. And I don't know if I've succeeded in that because I've been kind of meandering a bit here. But let me see if I can just reiterate this. The drama triangle, bear in mind, is a story. It's a story about you are a victim, you are being persecuted. That is a story, okay? So like when you read Harry Potter, you've got Harry Potter and you've got Lord Voldemort. Voldemort is the persecutor and Harry Potter is a victim, okay? That's one way to read the story. Now you could also read it where Harry Potter is the creator and Voldemort is the challenger. You could read the story either way. And, you know, the fact of the matter is it wouldn't change the story because whether you're using the drama triangle or the empowerment dynamic is a matter of perception. It's not about the events that are occurring. It has to do with your interpretation of the events. So what does that mean, your interpretation? Because the interpretation is like, what, is that a static thing? Is it just something that's there and it doesn't change? No. See, the important point here is that your interpretation is something that informs your actions. When you want to know, is somebody enlightened? You can't tell how enlightened somebody is just by looking at a single action. So if I'm going to sit there and I'm going to say, those piano teachers, they're responsible for everything that's wrong in the world. Ugh, I hate them. Does that mean that I'm not enlightened? Does that mean that I am a victim? No, see, because you gotta understand, it's language. It's just language. So you're fixated on the form and you're not looking at the function. You always have to look at the function. Why does it matter? When you're talking about, like, you gotta understand what the point of the spiritual path is. The point is not to distance yourself from things. The point is not. Now, you might think, like, it's to have equanimity and to be calm and peaceful. The point is to not let things get to you. Okay, no, that's not true. That's not the point of the path. The point of the path is liberation. The point of the path is freedom from ignorance. The point of the path is the elimination of suffering. Okay, these are all words. Now, but if you're going to put your own spin on it and you're going to look at it like, you know, just the way you look at it, just in a normal, conditioned, socially conditioned way, in which everybody here is just terrified, terrified of feeling bad, terrified of being stuck in something. But that's not the point. See, ignorance means that you are present with reality. Now, you might not know this, but if you pay attention, you'll notice it, that human beings get angry. Human beings feel stuck, feel frustrated. Human beings, all sorts of things. We do all sorts of things. that in from the point of view of meditation instructions are incorrect. Because in the meditation instructions will tell you that you should note conditioned phenomena, that you should see them for, you know, as objects, that you should keep your attention on the breath and always bring it back. You know, whatever the instructions are telling you to do. But let me ask you a question. Who is following these instructions? Like, do you see that there's a paradox at the center of it? That the paradox, like, that you, the meditator, is the recipient of these instructions. Like, there's no meditator. Spoiler alert. There's no meditator. So what does that mean? What do you make of that? If there's no meditator, who is following the instructions? What do the instructions mean? When the instructions tell you, well, if you're angry, note the anger. I'm angry. There's anger. And you notice, after practice, after hundreds of hours of practice, you notice that when you note your anger, something weird happens. Suddenly there's space. There's space between you and the anger. Suddenly those reactions that you have, that those times where you're like, I'm going to go out and hurt somebody because I'm so angry at them, you suddenly notice that that doesn't happen anymore because there's space. Because you note the anger, and suddenly it's like, oh, there's a space here, there's a void here, where I now have a choice as to how I'm going to react. You have that space, okay, in between the stimulus and the response, there is a space. And that space starts to emerge, and it pervades your life, okay? And you get to a point, and this is all still in the sort of third phase of this, and this is done in a fractal, okay? And it's I don't see the whole fractal, so I don't want to speak as if I do, because I don't. But that space, as you note objects, as you become aware of your reactions, as you become aware of your emotions, as you become aware of your perceptual experiences, that space emerges everywhere, everywhere, everywhere. And you find that eventually you get to a point where you are meditating all day long. Every time you bring your attention to anything where you're consciously aware that you are here and that there is awareness or attention, it all blurs together. And every time you think about the past and you're aware you're thinking about the past, and every time you think about the future and you're aware you're thinking about the future, and every time you are aware you're thinking about the present and you're aware you're thinking about the present, every time anybody starts talking about meditation, suddenly those voids start appearing everywhere. Everywhere. It's just like this bubbling foam that appears everywhere. And you can't escape from it. And you start to fetishize this idea of, like, there's space everywhere, there's void everywhere, I have freedom, and I don't have to react to things. And that is a trap. Because that's not the conclusion of the path. At the conclusion of the path, there is no meditator. There's nobody sitting here saying, oh, I'm so great at meditation. I'm so great at meditation that people can poke at me and I'm not going to respond at all. I'm just going to sit here with my eyes closed and just let people poke me. That's the meditator. That's the egotistical, arrogant meditator who says that. But you, without the meditator, okay? So this is what's sometimes called the true self. See, there's true self and there's no self. These are two different concepts, okay? Now, in Buddhism, we always talk about the no self. There's no self, the not self, non-self. This is the anatta. There is no self. That is in my understanding, and I'm not very knowledgeable, but in Hinduism or other alternative Indian religions, they will talk about the true self. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. Okay, there's just two different ways to look at it. When you get rid of the artifact, the constructed narrative self, this character, this cartoon character that you've created that doesn't really exist, what's left is just this organism here. It's just an animal. And that animal has reactions that have been conditioned into its nervous system. And that is the true self. That is the true self. And it's nonverbal. It's non-conceptual. It doesn't make sense. It's paradoxical and illogical. That's the thing that you're trying to embody. And it's a non-thing. It's a non-thing. It's nothing. But it is what it is, okay? So you can't sit there and say, well, I'm this great meditator. You know, they'll say, like, there's nobody who gets enlightened, okay? Like, you cannot be enlightened because you are an illusion, like you're a delusion. But you can get enlightened. See, there's two different yous that we're talking about here, and they're not of the same substance. One of them is a mirage, it's a fiction, and the other is a real living, breathing organism. The organism can get enlightened, but the organism is not you. It's like a character in a video game. The character in the video game is nothing. It's just a fabrication. The character is a fabrication. But the computer that the video game is running on, that's real. That's what we're talking about here. There's two different things. Now, you are the character. The one who says, I'm a great meditator. And who sees oneself as being a great meditator. And who's saying, I'm meditating. And I am not going to be triggered by you. And I'm going to learn nonviolent communication so that I can empathize with people and they're going to understand that I'm empathizing with them and they're not going to get on my case for not being a good listener or whatever. So I can, whatever you are trying to learn NVC for, whatever you're trying to learn meditation for, whatever you're trying to learn the drama triangle and the empowerment dynamic so that I can stop being a victim, so that I can be the creator of my own destiny. Okay, that guy is totally, totally full of hot air. Because that is just pure arrogance. Which is fine. Like, that's what you're programmed to do. Like, that's what the code is, that's what it's doing. But don't get that confused with real accomplishment here and real wisdom. See, at some point, you have to totally let go of that. You have to let go of the arrogance of it. Let go of that, of the ego there. And you have to say, you know, you say, Buddha, take the wheel. And you let Buddha do it. You know, you don't do it. You don't get enlightened. You just let Buddha do it to you. You have to be able to go into that spot. It's that spot in your mind somehow where there is no... I'm not the one doing it. And that requires going past the point where you're saying, I'm in control of this. I'm the one who's doing it. I'm the one who's getting enlightened. I'm the one who's getting insight. I'm the one who's non-reacting. I'm the one who's equanimous. And you go past that point. And you keep saying it, I'm equanimous, 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 and you just go into the rhythm of it, the swing of it, equanimous, equanimous, equanimous. It's just like a piece of music, and you're just bopping along to the beat. and you just do that and do it, and you go into the swing of it, and all the whole self constructs all just sync up with that rhythm, and the whole thing just resonates, and it resonates and resonates, and then it just syncs up. And that's it. And you didn't make that happen. You didn't even know it happened because you lost track of time. You lost track of everything before that happened. You got lost in a daydream. You weren't even paying attention. You totally forgot you were even meditating. And then suddenly there you are, staring right at yourself, staring yourself in the face. And you realize, I'm staring at myself. How is that possible? Oh, I see. That's the way it should be. That's the way it is. And you're done. And you fall away, right back. You land right where you were sitting. And you go right back to work. Okay, I hope that cleared up some things. Or maybe just made it more confusing. Who knows? Keep meditating. Keep noting what's happening. Be aware, be equanimous. Take it seriously. Be aware that you're taking it seriously. Don't take it so seriously. Be aware that you're not taking it seriously. Try to do the opposite of whatever you're doing. That's always a fun one. Talk to you next time.